You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudet. The BA.2 variant of the Omicron strain of the COVID-19 virus has become the dominant strain in more than 60 countries, including right here in the U.S. Dr. David Pate, who is the former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force, told KTVB Television this week that BA.2 is the dominant strain on the West Coast and in Canada, which is already seeing a surge in coronavirus patients. More than 4,000 Idahoans have officially tested positive for Omicron, including BA.2, and that variant is the dominant strain here in Idaho. And as we continue to cover the coronavirus pandemic, we do know that many of you have questions and concerns, and here at Idaho Matters, we want to answer those questions with facts. So if you have a question, send it to us, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. And Dr. David Pate is joining us live today to talk more and answer those questions. Hi, Dr. Pate.
Hi, Gemma.
So as I mentioned, Dr. Pate, BA.2 is now in more than 60 countries. What do we know? What is the latest with this variant?
So we have seen this causing surges in European and Asian countries. Some of those right after the first Omicron surge, the one that we went through, that was caused by BA.1. In some countries, it was not as bad. In other countries, it was worse than their Omicron surge. And as you mentioned in the lead-in, now Canada is facing a surge, as many of these European and Asian countries, their surges are declining. In the United States, we have not seen a surge yet. However, what is making us very watchful is the fact that BA.2 is now the predominant cause of infections in the United States, accounting for 86% of all the infections. So we are keeping a close eye on it. We have seen cases now increasing in more than half the states. It is not doing so in Idaho, but it is doing it in the majority of states.
And Dr. Pate, you've said you're concerned about people getting complacent about COVID. So what are you seeing, but also what are you concerned with?
Yeah, my concerns are a couple things. Number one, I certainly listen to a lot of the people, many of whom I have great respect for, but they go on social media or they go on TV and they say, you know, this BA.2, we're not going to have a BA.2 surge. Well, I hope they're right, but I have no idea what they're basing that on. Some will say, well, we're not going to have it because of how recently we just had our BA.1 surge. Well, all you have to do is look at a handful of other countries to see that doesn't hold up. Then the other common reason espoused as to why we're not going to have a surge is we've got so much immunity. Well, I can point out quite a few other countries that have more quote unquote immunity than we do, and they're having the surges. So I'm not saying that this convinces me that we are going to have a surge. I'm just saying I'm not convinced by the arguments that we're not going to have a surge. Mm-hmm. And of course, it would come at a bad time because many people, and I think the CDC and others have contributed to this, kind of think, you know, COVID is no longer a big problem. And of course, all we have to do is look at Washington, D.C. and an event that took place in the last couple of weeks and see that you can still have super spreader events. Now, fortunately, everybody attending that event was required to be vaccinated, fully vaccinated. But if they had not, we certainly might have seen some severe disease. The final reason why I'm concerned is because I think way too much of our discussion, and Gemma, you and I, we've talked about this for more than a year now, that way too much of the discussion is on whether people are going to die. You know, that I don't think is the major concern with this virus. What I'm concerned about is the long-term healthcare effects that we're seeing that are really not getting much attention. And plus the fact that there's a lot of stuff we just don't know yet, but we're continuing to see concerning signals. So I think that people are of the mindset that, well, if I get infected, no big deal, as long as I don't die. Well, it's good if you don't die, obviously, but I don't think that surviving means you won't have very serious problems in the long run.
Can we talk a little bit more about that? Because I agree with you. There's this idea of, well, you know what, if I get it at this point, I probably won't, as you said, won't die, right? There is more and more information, though, that's coming out about reinfections and what we're learning about that. So can you talk about that? Because there are people who can, I mean, I know of people who've been infected two or three times and they yeah. recover and they're kind of at a point too, where they're like, well, whatever, now I've had it a couple of times.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that there's several things that we need to clear up about this. Number one is that we have given people information, mostly through the CDC guidelines, that was certainly the best thinking some time ago, but we've got new evidence showing that it's not correct, and the CDC just reversed their position on this about a week ago. And that is that we've been communicating to people that a reinfection is one in which you get a second confirmed COVID case more than 90 days following your first. And so I'm not aware of any state in the United States that counts reinfections if they occur within 90 days. Well, we just got a study out of Belgium where they went back and looked at reinfections that happened from Delta to Omicron and BA1 to BA2. And that was 96 people. And the range of time from the first infection to the reinfection was 17 to 65 days. Wow. That's 96 people. Everybody they looked at that they identified, it was 17 to 65 days. Now, what does that tell you? What it tells you is none of those would have been counted as reinfections in the United States. Mm. And in fact, until, I'm not sure they changed it either. The European CDC has had their criteria has been 60 days. And so they would have caught some of these, but not all of these. Now the CDC admits that reinfections can occur as early as 23 days. And I've just given you one more study that shows it can be as soon as 17 days. So I think that's another point. Another common misperception is, and it's been widely believed, that if you get a reinfection, it's going to be mild and it won't be as bad as the first one. And that is certainly true for many people. However, I remind people the very first case of Omicron in the United States was in a 50-some-year-old man in Texas, and it was a reinfection, and he died. And what we have now been seeing from studies is that, in fact, you can, most people won't, but you can become more severely ill with the reinfection, and that can include even higher rates of death than with the first infection. And then there's the point that you've just made, Gemma, that you know people. In fact, I think almost everybody knows somebody that's been infected two or three times. We've been told this is rare, but of course we're finding lots of examples of it, and probably because we haven't been counting those cases correctly. And what we're concerned about is we don't know yet because we have to study this, but we're worried that people that do get repeatedly infected maybe are going to be the ones that will be at most risk for some of these long-term health consequences. We don't know, but we got to study that. But I think a cavalier approach towards getting infected is probably not the smartest. What we do realize, what we have seen from the studies right now is, number one, you are most likely to get reinfected when we do have a complete change in variant, like going from Delta to Omicron. Probably less of a chance when we go from one Omicron to the other, like BA1 to BA2. The other thing is the people that seem to do the worst with reinfections are the ones that get reinfected within 60 days. So those people that we haven't even been counting, those are the ones that are at probably at the highest risk for bad outcomes. And of course, this would also include everybody that was high risk to begin with, like older people, obese, medical problems, that kind of thing.
Dr. Pate, I do want to talk about a couple of things. First, the city of Philadelphia is reinstating an indoor mask mandate starting on April 18th, so starting this weekend. City officials there saying that they're seeing a bump in cases, and so they are trying to get ahead of seeing a larger bump or surge happening. So my question is this. Is this what we will potentially be seeing or should be seeing as we continue to deal with COVID, in the sense that we relax certain mandates, we take indoor mandates away because numbers are down, but then if numbers come back up, like, all right, now we need to, you know, pull the masks out again. And I am sure there are many people who would disagree with that. Yet at the same time, science shows that we know that this can work in mitigating a surge.
Yes. So with respect to, let me take your question in a few parts.
Okay.
One is, yes, our mitigations should fluctuate with what the risk is. So for example, at the moment here in Idaho, the risk is as low as it's been in a long time since the beginning of this pandemic. So yes, this could be the time if your kids are old enough, they're vaccinated, they have friends that also are vaccinated and take general precautions. This might be the time for sleepovers, not when we're having a surging count. This might be the time for visiting family members that are local in low risk areas, but those family members might have some greater risk. So grandma, grandpa, this might be a good time for that kind of a visit. So yes, we should fluctuate those public health measures. Now, I've not been an outspoken proponent for mask mandates other than requirements in schools, because I think we need to protect children because they're not old enough or informed enough to make these decisions. But look, I have no objections to mandates because I'm going to mask and protect myself and my family and others around me. So I'm not opposed to them, but I think in this politically divided environment, I don't push for those. In fact, I've talked with some of the leaders who are involved in these kinds of decisions, and I've told them, look, I would gladly be willing to support doing away with the public authority to even implement those mandates if you would equally fight disinformation. The problem is, we cannot. And of course, as you know, Gemma, even some of our own public health districts board members have been the sources of public disinformation. Mm-hmm. We can't. What I think is not tolerable is to say we're not going to make any of those requirements and you're free to mislead people. My view, having been a longtime physician, is I tell my patients what the problem is, I tell them what the risks are, I tell them what my advice is, and then they make their decision. And clearly there are going to be people that are not going to be concerned about this, and that's fine. But what I think is terrible is that people thinking they're fine because they're listening to disinformation that is in fact being perpetuated by our own lieutenant governor, our own legislature, our own public health district board members, And then we just leave people to make ill-informed decisions. Mm-hmm. I think that's the worst case. But yes, to your general question, I do think, you know, people talk about this virus becoming endemic. I think that's very misleading. I think this is going to, for the foreseeable future, continue to be more of an epidemic virus where we're going to have these surges up and down. And I think what we do is we, when the surges are down, we relax our precautions. When the surges are up, we enhance our precautions.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. And then the CDC today said that they are extending the mask mandate for public transportation, so for plane travel, that they will extend it at least 2 more weeks. Your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, good heavens. you know, there's a lot of criticism, particularly recently, that the CDC is bowing to special interests, corporate interests. I have no idea whether that's correct or not. I have no insights to the inner workings of the CDC. I have long been one of the strongest advocates of the CDC. They have just been impeccable in the past. What we're seeing in this pandemic has been at times really unexplainable. And we know that the airline CEOs, not all of them, but most of them, have been pushing to do away with these mask mandates. And I understand, you know, it's putting their staff in a terrible position when they have to try to enforce these, that kind of stuff. However, we have just seen over in England what happens when you have a surge and you don't require people that are all cramped together on a plane to wear masks. And mm-hmm. what basically it did is it shut down one of the largest international airports over there, because now you have pilots all the flight staff out sick. So I just think we need to be sensible about this. I mean, for heaven's sake, CDC, they see the same numbers I do and more. We're seeing we've seen what happens to BA2 in other countries. We see that it is now 86% in the United States by the CDC's own measurement. Do they really think this is the time that you don't have masks on planes and other public transportation when this variant is apparently something like 30% more transmissible than the surge we just had? And so many of us are just like, what the heck? And I used a nice word so that Samantha doesn't hit the bleep button. But, you know, what the heck? And really, was this a tough call? I don't know what the strategy is about saying 2 weeks, whether they right. just feel like that's what is socially acceptable these days. And I do think sending the message that it's not going to be forever is a good one. But 2 weeks, mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure where they came up with that. And I think that is what hurts the CDC, is we can all agree to disagree about different things. If you and I had the same facts, Gemma, you might make one decision, I might make the other. But the problem with the CDC is they're not telling us what the decision is based on. And so we can't even have rational discussions about it. And I think most of us, as long as they had a scientific reason for basing the decision, even if we disagree, we'd be fine with it. But instead, we have no idea where they're coming with this stuff.
Dr. Pate, Kathy sent us this question about a Red Cross antibody test. Let's take a listen.
I have a question for Dr. Pate on COVID. I recently received results from the Red Cross on my antibodies saying that they were reactive plus. Could that information help me make a decision about when I should get a booster?
Well, it's a fantastic question, and I wish I could say yes, but unfortunately, at this point in time, number one, we don't know. The medical term we use, the scientific term we use, is called immune correlates. In other words, I don't know how to test somebody to determine how well protected they are. That means I don't know of an antibody level that, oh, okay, well, you have this level, so you're okay. The other complicating factor is we don't know which kind of antibodies you have. Are they neutralizing antibodies? Are they binding antibodies? How much of these antibodies are they? Is it because you were, is she getting a plus level because she was just recently infected, but that may go down. So unfortunately, I don't think we can really use that. I think that's great. She's got antibodies and sounds like she's got a healthy dose of them, but we don't have established where we can say, oh, you have this level of antibodies, so we know you're protected. And we also know that the protection from disease is much more than just antibodies. So I would say she should make her decision on, I can't remember, she was saying it was her first or second booster. If it's her first booster, if it's time, she should definitely get that. I think the data is very clear that you are going to be better protected both from infection and severe disease if you get boosted. For the second booster, that's a little less clear, but if she is over 60, if she has any medical problems, if it's been more than 4 months since her first booster, I would certainly give consideration to getting boosted. And I wouldn't even factor in the antibody test results.
Dr. Pate Johnson, in an interesting question, writing, for the second booster, should I get boosted with a different vaccine than the original and first booster?
You know, that is a fantastic question, one I've wondered myself. So the answer is we don't have the answer to that question. Now, let me tell you what some of the thoughts behind why you might want to consider a different one and why you might not want to consider a different one. So in the category of why you might want a different one, it kind of relates back to the last caller's question. And that is that when we've done so-called mix and match studies, it has shown us that the neutralizing antibody increase that you get after the booster is higher with the what we call heterologous, meaning that you got a different vaccine from the first one, and than it is if you get the second boost with the same vaccine. The problem is, I don't know what that means, because you get a healthy boost even if it's the same booster. And again, not knowing what level of antibody you need to be protected, I can't tell you, are you just kind of, you know, what you're doing is going for extra credit when you already have the A, or whether it's really a meaningful increase. So that's the reason why you might want to consider it. I cannot tell you that you're going to be better protected, though. The reason you might not want to is that we actually have a new study out and looks more deeply at the immune response to the vaccines. And let me just talk about Pfizer and Moderna, since that's what most people are dealing with, and that's what was studied here. The immune responses are different, and it might slightly be better with Moderna. So I would say if you're somebody who got three Pfizers, yeah, I wouldn't say no if you wanted to try to take Moderna for the second booster. If you already got three Modernas, like myself, I'm getting a Moderna because what I want to boost is all those things that were desirable in the immune response. What we think would happen if you did the Pfizer and then got the Moderna is you might get a more breadth of your antibodies. But the problem is, I can't tell you, does that, so getting that single shot then, but will that wear off pretty quickly and you kind of lose the benefit of it, where it would have been better to boost the response that you already built? So I would say for right now, it probably most people, you ought to just get the same vaccine that you got. But if you got Pfizer and you wanted to consider getting Moderna, I don't think that's unreasonable.
Such good information, Dr. Pate. We really appreciate your time with us. We've been talking with Dr. David Pate. He is the former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. Of course, Dr. Pate will be back with us next Wednesday. I know we didn't get to everyone's questions, but do send them to us, idahomatters@boisestate.edu, and we will get those answered next week. Dr. Pate, it's always great to have you on the program.
Thanks, Gemma. Great to be with you.
Next up on Idaho Matters, our very own George Prentice joins us talking about maybe some things we want to watch with this snowy weather showing up. More next.